Hi guys, welcome back to the show. I'm so excited to have you here today, and I'm so excited to bring you today's episode because my guest today is actually one of my favorite people that I've ever interviewed, and that's Nomi Levy, or you might know her from Instagram as Nomi Knows Nutrition. And I'll tell you why I'm obsessed with her. I know you will be too if you don't already know her. I've been following Nomi on Instagram for I think like around a year maybe, and she shares the tip of the day. She does these really quick little videos with tips of the day on how you can improve your health. And they're so practical. They're so digestible. She takes scientific information and breaks it down in such a clear way. And she just makes you like feel really motivated to want to take care of your health. I feel like there's so much that I've learned from her and so much that I've implemented because of her, which I love. Like, I'm all about putting things into action, building better habits. You guys know that. And one other thing I have to say about Nomi before I give you her background is that there's a lot of people out there in the health and wellness space on social media who I feel like maybe present a certain way on social media, but are different or like fall flat in real life. I got to meet Nomi in person at an event a couple of months ago before we did this interview. And I was like, you're everything on Instagram, but like even better in real life. She has the best energy. She's just like one of those magnetic, sparkly people that you just like being around. I don't know how else to explain it. And it was such a pleasure to meet her. It was such a pleasure to have her on the podcast. I think she gives such valuable information. And she's also someone who really knows her stuff in terms of the science, but is not looking to help people become perfect robots when it comes to their health and nutrition. She really is someone who is going to help you take this information and apply it so that you could live a better life. Like, you could really see she's not, you know, just like focused on eating healthy for the sake of eating healthy. It's so that you can take that and be a better mom and be a better friend and be, you know, more active in your community. And I see her like not just walk the walk, but talk the talk. And I really admire that in her and I really appreciate that. So I think you guys are going to love this episode. And let me tell you a little bit more about Nomi. Nomi is a double board certified nutritionist and health and wellness coach affiliated with Duke Integrative Medicine at Duke University. She holds a master's of science in nutrition and functional medicine. Her undergraduate and graduate research topics have included the psychology of long-term weight loss maintenance and the role of nutrition in ADHD. She has a private coaching practice in Jerusalem and on Zoom with clients from all over the world. Additionally, she also runs educational programs on nutrition, healthy lifestyle essentials, and behavioral changes. She can be reached at Nomi Knows Nutrition on Instagram or by email at nomi@nomiknows.com. We'll link all of her info up in the show notes. And in this episode, you're going to hear Nomi share how her travels around the world when she was 19 inspired her to start creating a healthier lifestyle and teach others to do the same by taking a personalized functional approach to nutrition is crucial for treating the root cause of your symptoms, the problem with our food culture in America, why restrictive dieting doesn't work, and what to focus on instead, simple tips that will actually help you improve your health, why we need to regulate our blood sugar throughout our entire lifespan, how to improve your health during perimenopause, and so much more. I know you guys are going to love this episode. So without further ado, let's dive in and hear from Nomi. Welcome to the About Health and Hormones podcast. I'm your host, Lauren Allen, a recovered sugar addict turned certified nutrition coach on a mission to help women learn how to balance their hormones and optimize their fertility. On this podcast, we have conversations with experts about all things health, hormones, wellness, nutrition, and more to give you the information, tips, and tricks you need to take control of your health and feel amazing in your body. I am so happy that you're here and I can't wait to dive in. Hello, Nomi, welcome to the show.
Hey, I'm so happy to be here. This is my favorite thing to talk about, anything health related.
I'm so excited. Also, like personally, I'm such a fan of yours. And I'll just tell the listeners, it's funny because we met in person a few weeks ago. We were both at an event here in Israel. And I was like, I had been following you for a while, but you're the type of person who, like, I don't know, in person, I was like, oh my gosh, I'm so excited to meet Nomi, but I'm very nervous. And then when we got introduced, someone literally said, like, you should have Nomi on your podcast. And I felt like a third grader who someone had just been like, I'm going to tell this boy that you like him and he should like be your boyfriend. I was like, oh my God, this is not how I wanted this to go. And you're like, Sure, you were so nice and so gracious. So I'm so excited that you're here, and I'm so excited to just like share all your wisdom with everybody.
Well, thank you. First of all, I feel like any place that we can get women talking and thinking about their health, it doesn't matter whether there's one listener. I always say with my Instagram, like I would do my reels if there was like one like, because I think it's so important, like that one person. And I think like anywhere that we can connect. And so I love that you're providing a forum, and I love being able to connect with your audience and your people. And it's funny because in my head, I'm not the cool girl. So I'm happy that we ended up on this podcast and that it worked out and that you weren't that intimidated. And I'm really excited to be here.
No, I was going to ask you, I had been like planning out my whole message to you on DMs, but then I'm just happy it came together organically. But before we get into the health stuff, because one thing that I particularly love about the way you share content is you have such good like practical tips. If you don't follow Nomi already, you have to, because she does these tip of the day things on Instagram that are just like so helpful and so easy, and you make health so easy. But before we even get into that, can you just tell us like a little bit about yourself, your background? Were you always into health? Like, how'd you get here?
Okay. So, well, actually 20 years ago, I was living in Hong Kong. I grew up in the Minnesota in the Midwest. And if you know anything about nutrition in the 80s and 90s in the Midwest, it was not nutrition. Unfortunately, there was this low fat movement that the American Cardiology Association had pushed towards based on some faulty understanding of dietetics and not enough nutritional biochemistry. And so I grew up on this diet of like, my parents were very well-intentioned. There was plenty of ultra-processed food around my house. The one good thing is that we did sit down to a family dinner every night, but there was a lot of things like Pop-Tarts and cereal. Anyway, so when I was 19, I moved to Hong Kong for work, and I was exposed to a completely different way of living and eating. And I also got into yoga. I was studying there with a Swami, and it really just shifted my whole relationship with food, what I understood how food should make me feel. It wasn't about this hyper palatable taste experience. It was about energy and feeling great in my body. And I really strive to sort of help people move from that space of like, what's the best thing for me, or what should I do, or how can I move forward, and make it easy. Because I do think that the one thing about my health is I sort of gradually stepped into it. Started with my Swami, started with yoga. Then I moved a couple of times, a couple international moves, and I just sort of made a lot of gradual upgrades. And that's really what I encourage my clients to do. So I ended up, when I was in my 30s, going to grad school, doing my graduate degree in nutrition and functional medicine. Before that, I had trained at Duke University at their Integrative Medicine Center as a health coach, because I was studying family therapy. I loved the psychology of behavior change, but I wanted to do it more around health. And then I transitioned and I said, you know what, I want to do more than just the psychology side. I really want to understand how to support people. I want to understand the science behind it in an even deeper way than just basic nutrition studies. And so I went and did my nutrition and functional medicine graduate studies. And then I did 2 years of supervision under two different functional medicine clinics.
Wow. That makes a lot of sense that you have experience with the behavioral science and changes, because that's like, I think something that I really see coming across in your content. It's not just like, how do I take these complex nutrition science ideas and share that with people? But like, how do we translate it into actionable behaviors that are then going to also give people the results that they want? Because like, the knowledge is great, but unless you're doing things, it's not really going to make such a difference. You know what I mean?
100%. Also, we live in an information age where knowledge is cheap, readily available, and we have it more than ever at our fingertips. It's not even contextual. So oftentimes with clients, they're coming to me and they're saying, oh my gosh, I'm so overwhelmed. I've been told either to do this by my doctor or my practitioner. I've seen this on the internet. Should I be cold plunging? I listened to this podcast. And so it's really about, for me, the most essential thing is to get people focusing on what will have the biggest impact on their health, and then actually making it an actionable step. And oftentimes that's actually taking people back much further than they thought. You know, when somebody says, I want to move up my bedtime from 1 a.m. and I want to get on a better sleep schedule so my circadian rhythm is supporting my hormones, I'm not necessarily saying to them, okay, so go to bed at 10, even though I want them to be in bed by 10. We're moving their bedtime up in like 15, 20 minute increments. And that they could do for 3 months before they move on to the next thing. So oftentimes it's really about making it tiny, doable, and helping clients see that that's what they're going to be doing consistently to be successful.
Yeah, I love that. And do you have like a particular place that you start with when people come to you, or it really depends on the person? Like, is it always starting with sleep as the foundation, or do you see like starting with nutrition to be more important? You know, how do you guide people with it?
So that's a great question. I say it's very personal. My background is in personalized medical nutrition therapy. That's what I'm trained in. And we're really looking at the individual. And the individual is not just individual according to their genome and lab assessments, but they're also individual according to their behavior, lifestyle, and finances. There's so much context going on that we have to think about. So it could be that I get a client who's coming to me because they have an abnormal lipid profile, but they are actually really resistant to changing their diet. And so oftentimes we can actually say, okay, well, what do you enjoy to do? And they'll remember, oh, I used to love working out. Well, that's another way to include lipids. So it's really comprehensive. It's really individual. But I always say with my clients, if they're working with me, I know they're high achieving and I know that they want to go to the next step. They don't end up by me by accident. I feel like the clients that I connect with are really willing to do the hard work and I'm always impressed with it. And so I do, every client is always going to leave with homework, but also a challenge, like something that I see from my understanding, it's going to be a little bit more of a hard thing for them to do. And meeting that challenge is where I want them to be by the next session.
That's awesome. I feel like that's really what, you know, gets people to grow. Because they always say you can't like grow in your comfort zone. You know what I mean? It's like that little push, but not too much of a push. And I know you work with a lot of women in that phase of life. That's like the perimenopause or like even postmenopause stage. And I have so many women writing in that, like, there's just so many challenges that they start experiencing that they're like, where did this even come from? What do you see as some of like the biggest symptoms popping up for women around that age or struggles that they're having?
First of all, there's not just the hormonal changes where we see the cycle shortening or becoming more irregular. That's kind of the obvious one. Sometimes women are experiencing brain fog, anxiety, sleep cycle changes, bowel movement changes. They're having less frequent bowel movements. They were having a regular bowel movement every single day. And all of a sudden, it's like every other day. It's things that are often subtle and kind of sneak up on them. And it's things that also, if they don't get to the right practitioner, that might be dismissed. Interesting side story. I had a friend actually who went to a doctor and said, you know, something's wrong with me. I'm having these weird, my personality is like different and I'm just not feeling like myself. I'm having these horrible headaches. They told her it was menopause. In the end, she actually had a brain tumor.
Oh my gosh.
That is an extremely rare manifestation of symptoms. But what I want to say is your practitioner needs to be listening to you 100%. And that's a relationship that you can feel. So when you go to your practitioner with what you're feeling, they have to be validating it, listening, and looking at the whole context. If somebody blows you off or sort of dismisses and says, oh, no, it's your age, it's normal. First of all, today, there's so many ways to approach menopause. I've had clients who go through them. Literally, I had one client, she gave me like hope. She had no changes, no anxiety, no changes in bowel movements or sleep, no changes in brain fog. One day, menopause, done. She was just like, it was like that. And then there's women where they really suffer from the symptoms for years and they notice weight changes. They notice that they're gaining weight in different places, abdominal area, more in their hips. And they're wondering what's happening to my body. So it's important to really look at those things. Your genetics are going to impact this. And there's tools for every single symptom of menopause. Some of the tools could be things like hormone replacement therapy, and that's something to discuss with the doctor. But there's also other tools that we can use, like nutrition and lifestyle intervention.
Yeah. Can we get a little bit more into like the nutrition and lifestyle intervention specifically for some of those mood dysregulations, the brain fog, the mood swings? I hear that a lot of people being like, I just don't feel like myself, or I feel like I used to feel so much brighter or more like, you know, energetic. And I know it could be caused by so many different things, but like, what do you see being some of the basic things that can help people through those kinds of symptoms?
So first, is I always say with my clients that even if you're coming in and we think that we're treating a condition or dealing with a condition, right? We're using nutrition and lifestyle to deal with the symptoms of a condition, that condition being menopause. We do have to assess and make sure that this is not just associated with your lifestyle, because many of the symptoms associated with menopause can just be associated with not getting enough sleep, not prioritizing yourself, not being on your hormonal cycle, having your circadian rhythm help to dictate that hormonal cycle. Your food is off. So first, we want to kind of check off the essentials. Are you getting those 8 to 9 hours of sleep. And like, let's put all of those things in place and see what symptoms are still left over. So are you getting those 7 to 9 hours is actually what I meant today, 7 to 9 hours of sleep. Are some of those hours happening before midnight? Are they consistent? Okay, we have things that go and happen at night. We don't necessarily get it 7 nights a week, but 5 to 6 nights a week, are you on your sleep schedule? So check in with all of those things and then make sure that we're saying, okay, let's check off all these boxes. What are you eating for breakfast? How does that influence your energy levels? I'll say this, the biggest things that to impact sort of mood and how we feel in our energy levels in our 40s, because all women are going through hormonal changes in their 40s. So we want to make sure, number one, that we're prioritizing strength training. We are, from the age of 40, we have decreased muscle protein synthesis. I did actually part of my graduate research in sarcopenia. And I was like, I was in my 30s when I started it. And I actually that week hired a personal trainer, because sarcopenia is basically this condition where we have more fatty muscle than good or fatty tissue than muscle fibers. It starts in our 40s. We have this breakdown of muscle. We don't take up protein as easily. And as we get older, we are losing muscle mass at an astounding rate starting at age 40, which I'm in my 40s. I feel like I'm 20. I can't believe that I'm losing muscle at that rate. It's like crazy to think about that.
I mean, you look like you're in your 20s. I'm like, I'm happy you said that, because we spoke about this in person. Like, nobody knows how old you are because you look so good. But keep going about the muscle mass, because this is really important. I think also, especially for women from like older generations, I think now younger women are getting more into weightlifting and stuff. But I feel like that was always kind of seen as the man's exercise, and women were, you know, suited to like Pilates and yoga, and that's like more of the quote unquote girl exercise. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, don't put me in a Pilates class. I mean, I like it, but it's not my thing. I want to have some heavy weights. And you know what the truth is? I hate weight training. I'm just going to be honest, because I think like one of the things about, you know, being a practitioner, it's not like I'm eating almonds and apples all day and I'm like lifting weights and I just love this. There's things that I love about my healthy lifestyle, and there's things that I resist every single time. And one of those is strength training. So we need to make sure that we're lifting weights, that we're growing our muscle mass as we get older for a few reasons. Number one, muscle is the biggest user of glucose. So when we're talking about hormonal control, we want to talk about how we're utilizing glucose. And if we are losing muscle mass, we are not going to be utilizing glucose as well. Number two, lean muscle mass is associated with longevity. And it's really important, the older we get, that we keep building muscle, even in our 80s. And it's never too late to start. We can start lifting weights at any age and see benefits. The other thing is that it's really interesting, but when it comes to the mood changes that can happen for women in their perimenopausal years, well, we have this loss of estrogen, and estrogen, that decreased estrogen can affect and increase our chances of anxiety. Interestingly, we also see this in adolescence when the brain is first flooded with estrogen. We also have an increase in anxiety. So these fluctuations in estrogen are going to change the mood. But one of the things we know about weight training is that when we lift weights, we actually secrete compounds that influence our mood. And so we want to make sure that we're doing everything that we can, even if we don't have the same level of estrogen sensitivity, that we still are giving our body other compounds that are going to increase our mood. And so weight training is one of them. Ideally, we're doing it 2 to 3 times a week. And it does not have to be a 30, 40, 45 minute weight training session. It can be as little as 10 minutes to see benefits. I personally started lifting weights more seriously in the last 2 years. And I think I'll share a very surprising thing. My weight's been the same since I'm 20 years old, except with pregnancy and post-pregnancy period. I gained 5 pounds and I don't weigh myself. So I only noticed this when I one day just stepped on the scale and I was like, oh, that's so interesting. I gained 5 pounds, but my clothes have not changed a bit. I'm wearing the same clothes that I've always worn. So that was a really good confirmation for me that I am building muscle, even without doing expensive testing to assess that muscle mass.
I'm so happy you brought that up, because this is something that I see a lot of people focus just on the absolute number on the scale. And they're just like constantly trying to see the number going down. And I know there's a lot of reasons why people might do that. It depends also, I think, like what you heard about health growing up. And there's this really strong cultural association between the number on the scale and your overall health status. And I know that this is also something that you talk about. So tell us a little bit about why that is not really, you know, that's not really measuring your true health.
Weight is never the goal. A number is never the goal. Weight is a symptom. So if somebody says, I'm overweight, we're not saying, okay, I want to get to this specific number. That's not the goal. The goal is really about feeling energetic and maintaining a healthy weight that's associated with a decreased risk of disease. But an extra two, you know, I once had a client come to me and she was 80 at the time that she came to me, and she wanted to lose 2 kilos. And I had to remind her, and she was within, you know, we don't use BMI to say like a finite, this is health and this is not health, but just using it as one number, she was within a normal BMI for her height. And she was saying to me, she wants to lose 2 kilos. And I said, you know, at your age, being overweight is will decrease your risk factors as opposed to being underweight. And these 2 kilos are really small. But for her, this number had been the number she had always been. And so I think it was important. It's important to remember that the number it's just the number. We're not talking, you know, there's form and there's function. What can we do with our body? How do we feel? What is our energy every day? How do we feel about our food? We have to have a relationship with food until we're 120. And if we spend the majority of that relationship thinking about restriction and control as opposed to flow and positive decisions, we're not going to enjoy that relationship. And that's going to be an unhealthy factor in our life.
I think that's very powerful what you just said. We have to have a relationship with our food for hopefully 120 years. But I want to back up to something that you said before about before even assessing like all the different health factors or, you know, probably getting into the nitty gritty of like specific nutrients and supplements, kind of just figuring out if your overall lifestyle is supportive of health or if that's what's causing the symptoms. I remember I was speaking to someone and I'm like, I always am very insular, like in the stage of life that I'm in. And I always think the stage of life that I'm currently in is the hardest stage. So like right now I'm in like the like 1-year-old and toddler stage. And I was talking to someone in their 40s who was like, you know, this phase of life is just so hard and, you know, not sleeping. I was like, what do you mean? Your kids are potty trained. Like they were old teenagers or in their young 20s. Like, how could it be hard if your kids are potty trained? Like, I don't understand. Aren't your kids just, don't they sleep through the night? Or like if they wake up, they don't wake you up. And she's like, no, I have to wait up for my teenagers to get home. And there's like, Lauren, it doesn't just get easier once your kids get potty trained. And I was like, oh shoot. Like that, I thought that's what happens. But what are some of the other things? Because I know, like, let's say with a lot of my friends, they really struggle with, you know, finding the time to like get outside, work, and like the stress of being a young mother is putting a major strain on their health. That's like not even connected to the nutrition necessarily. In that peri or postmenopause stage, like what are some of the lifestyle factors that are also kind of just affecting women before we even get into the nutrition piece?
So definitely, listen, first of all, I want to say like a plug for, I'm so happy in my 40s. 40s is amazing. It's true. I will say this. I think sleep is the magic that most people are missing in their life. Whether it's to ameliorate their health issues or chronic condition, whether it's to feel more motivated and to wake up feeling awesome and having this amazing energy, we have to prioritize sleep. So it is the magic. And I think that it is hard to sleep when you have a busy life and you have work obligations and family obligations and the holidays and there's all these things. I will say this, like for me personally, I clock out. Like I actually clock out of like the house at, I don't know, between 6 and 7:30. I'm done. Dinner's made, dinner's served. I'm not doing the dishes. This sounds crazy. And I always say you can do it all, but not at the same time. And you certainly don't have to do it on anybody else's schedule. I would rather wake up at 5 in the morning and do dishes and load the dishwasher when I'm feeling amazing. And I actually like loading the dishwasher at that point, than resentfully loading the dishwasher at 7:30 at night because everybody else is out of the house running their things, doing their kid life and activities. And I'm at home like trying to, I really want to be asleep, but I'm really cleaning. So that's not for me. I think that's like, just that's my feeling. And I will say my house sometimes at the end of the day is flying, like absolutely flying. And I'm totally fine with that. And I have clients who will say to me, I can't go to sleep unless my house is like 100% clean. And I'm like, so let's just start by leaving it a little messy. Like, let's just start by like one, you know, because that 20 minutes that you aren't doing the dishes is 20 more minutes towards your sleep hygiene and nighttime routine. But you'll gain an hour in the morning in terms of your energy, focus, and motivation to do all these things.
This is like my biggest current struggle right now. Also, because for us, dinner is not just like the dishes, but there's like sweet potato on the ceiling, on the floor. Like I get in that toddler stage and I'm really trying to like condition myself to be like, it's okay that it's messy. Because I don't think I'm doing like 20 minutes of cleanup after the kids go to sleep. It's closer to an hour. The toys are everywhere. There's literally, it's like a these two small humans, they create so much mess. It's unbelievable. But I think also something that you just said that I like, it resonated for me because you just don't hear it a lot. You're like, 40s are amazing. Like, I feel great. And I think there's something also that's just been told to women since they're young. Like, I don't know what the exact age is. Maybe it's like after 25, you know, things are going downhill from X age. And I think people just kind of expect like, oh, you know, you hit your 30s, you start feeling worse. Like, I don't think a lot of people associate 40s with vibrancy and feeling energetic. And I love that you're like, no, that's just a story. Like, we could change the story around that.
100% a story. It's probably fueled by the beauty and diet industry. The diet industry is a $69 billion industry. Then add on top of that, the wellness industry, right? So we've got the diet industry that's trying to make us afraid of gaining any weight and keep us hyper-focused on products and things that it can sell us to not gain weight. And then we've got the wellness industry that is trying to scare us into not dying. And both of them are creating anxiety and unnecessary focus when really we have so much more purpose in this world than to be focused on like that stuff. Like, I don't know about you, but I mean, I spend a lot of time in the nutrition research, but it's very concentrated. I do my reviews that I do in the morning of the current research so I can stay up to date with what I'm teaching with my clients. I'm working with my clients, but then my head is out of nutrition. I love reading about it, but I'm not sitting around like being obsessed with it. I have so much other stuff I want to do. And that's what I want my clients to leave their sessions with, is like clarity and focus, knowing like how to eat in a smart way so that they can do everything else they want to do in life. There's like no counting calories, no counting macros, no obsessing about eating every 2 hours. There's like ways to find flow with our food decisions that leave us so open to everything else. And I'll say this, your 40s, awesome. 30s, really good, but 40s are even better.
I love it. I'm excited because everyone also says like you get over caring about a lot of stupid things once you like turn 30 and then 40 and then 50. I'm going to turn 29 next month. So I'm like, oh, I'm excited to like get into those stages. And it's cool to be like, wait, I'm actually excited to get older. But going back to something that you just said about how like, you know, it's not about focusing and obsessing with the food. I think that's a misconception that a lot of people have. Like, I want to get healthy. That means I'm going to have to become so hyper obsessed and focused with food. And I actually do think, especially like in the secular wellness world, I do see a lot of that, that it almost becomes the hobby for people. Like, their hobby is health and wellness. And I always try to tell people, like, it's a means to an end. Listen, if you're super passionate about it, awesome. Like, I'm not going to take that away from you, but it doesn't have to be that. It's more like this is a tool to help you feel good and vibrant so that you could go then do the other things you care about, whether that's being with your family. Or I actually had a client who was just telling me, she's like had this lifelong dream to start this specific business. And she's like, I'm finally feeling good enough to take the certification course that I need to do it. I was like, that's what this is about. Like, it's so exciting to see her pursuing these passions in life. And I feel like it's exactly what you're saying. It's not about like hyper obsessing and hyper focusing on it. And do you feel like there's a lot of unlearning that people have to do when they come to you?
Totally. I have to tell people, like, first of all, I spent 2 hours this morning teaching gap year students, like 18 to 20 year old girls. And the questions I get are so indicative of the nutrition trends that are floating out on social media. And so a lot of times I say, like, listen, just temporarily, I need you to unfollow like all of the researchers. Or any, just focus on what I'm trying to tell you. This is a evidence-based, evidence-informed from my clinical practice. This is a way to take you forward, but I don't want to feed your anxiety. I want to feed your strength. I want to feed your positive energy. But gathering more information is making you anxious, and it's going to take away from your focus on this process, and it's going to kind of undermine our work together, because I'm going to tell you to do something, and you're going to be like, wait. I thought I was supposed to be intermittent fasting. And I'm going to be like, no, don't intermittent fast, especially in perimenopause.
What are some of like the biggest myths that people think they should be doing?
So I will say, first of all, within medical nutrition therapy, there are interventions, dietary patterns that we use to address specific diseases. There's research there, you know, whether it's colitis, ulcerative colitis, Crohn's, renal disorders. There's even some research around keto and some neurological disorders. There is space sometimes for some of the trends, right? Like, I think keto is a tool, but I don't think of it as like a lifestyle. I think it's a tool for people who have a medical need for it.
Right. And like, I know there's a lot of research, let's say around like epilepsy and the keto diet, which I don't know about you, like no one coming to me is also struggling with epilepsy. So it's like, that's something we do have some good research on, but it's not, that doesn't necessarily mean it's for you, you know?
100%. First of all, the research around keto and epilepsy was because until like the late, early 1930s, we didn't have a medication for epilepsy. So we used keto as a way to control epilepsy. And by the way, it doesn't work with everybody. There still is an epilepsy. Johns Hopkins has a fantastic clinic for people who are, they don't respond to medication, but it's great. It doesn't necessarily mean that there's not other risks associated with that diet and that they have to be addressed by a practitioner, right? Because if we're not eating the right amounts of fibers and carbohydrates, how is that affecting the microbiome? So it has to be balanced and it has to be monitored. But I would say the biggest things I'm seeing right now is intermittent fasting. 12 hours of non-eating is normal. That's just part of being a human. Some women go towards like 13 hours. More than that, 13 to 14 hours, more than that, if women say to me, but I'm just not hungry. So I'll often say, well, how much coffee are you drinking? Because caffeine is an appetite suppressant. So at this point, you're not fasting. You're actually suppressing your appetite with a substance. So I see a lot of intermittent fasting from young women, which I always, you know, we don't need, young women don't need that, young, healthy women. There's a lot of interest now in cold plunging. The questions I would ask are, is the research substantial enough for women to be engaging in this? Do we have enough research on women doing cold plunging? Is it good for our cortisol levels? We have a whole different hormone symphony going on than men. Most of the research is generally conducted on men. I see a lot of, right now I'm getting a lot of questions about Ozempic.
Oh, I don't think we've talked about that yet on the podcast. So tell us, I guess, a little bit about the questions you get and what's your take on it.
Ozempic, from my understanding, temporarily increases your metabolism, slows digestion, and it basically kind of forces you not to eat. My clients who have come to me after Ozempic have been like, I wasn't even hungry. They basically didn't eat. I think here's my thing. I can see a client, you know, I had a client who came to me after a huge weight loss that was done over very gradually over 3 years. And she said, you know, I just want to get off. I've been like doing this. And she was really, she'd maintained that weight loss. And she's like, now I just want to do Ozempic. My doctor said it was fine. And I said, you know, like, she really has all the habits in place for losing weight. But I understand also just wanting to kind of be done with the process and then continue with the habits that she's been doing to maintain that weight loss. Personally, I'm not a huge fan of pharmaceuticals. I think they always have their place. And that's something to be discussed with the doctor. I don't love that Ozempic slows down digestion, especially when I think of, you know, having a daily bowel movement. I meet a lot of constipated clients on Ozempic. To me, that's a huge red flag. When I have a client who comes into me and they're constipated, whatever the reason is, I don't care what their other goals are. My first goal is to get their bowels moving. So I'm always concerned about those kinds of symptoms because they just kind of go against the nature of how our body's supposed to work.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I always tell people, like, imagine if we cared as much about the number of times we're going to the bathroom a week as the number on the scale. Because people will tell me, like, I go to the bathroom maybe once a week. I'm like, to me, is like, oh my God, like, you're not eliminating properly. You're not.
According to the Rome criteria, that's functional constipation. But I would say this also, like, we need a daily bowel movement. And the best way, I always say, like, you can always tell when a client, you know, I'll see a client, do you have a daily bowel movement? And they're like, yeah, that hesitation shows me like that we need to improve. Just that. If you have a daily bowel, you're like, yeah, for sure. Like there's no question, you know. But right. Somebody has to go, yeah, or most of the time, or no, there's work to be done right there. And as soon as you get them moving, a person's going to feel more energetic. They're going to feel less bloated. It's such a quality of life symptom to address with clients.
Yeah, 1,000%. I mean, also just feeling constipated is a horrible feeling. Thank God it's like not something I've had a lot of experience with, but here and there I've had it and it's terrible. So I think that's, it's like really important to mention those side effects. And I know a lot of people have come out and spoken about how like it really feels like the thing that moved the needle for them in terms of weight loss. But I know another thing that can happen with it is going back to what you said about muscle mass, it helps a lot of times decrease your weight through losing muscle mass and not necessarily losing fat.
With all weight loss, you will lose some lean muscle mass. And so the more rapid the weight loss, the more caloric deprivation, you will lose more muscle mass. And that's a risk because then what happens there? Well, muscle mass takes more metabolism to maintain than body fat. What happens when we don't eat? Our body sees that as like a stress. And it says, okay, let's slow down the metabolism in case this is a prolonged situation. In terms of the research, when it comes to all of these diets, I'm not including Ozempic in this, but in terms of like any diet, whether it's keto, intermittent fasting, caloric restriction, high protein, anti-inflammatory, when we look at the dietary patterns, what we see is that dietary patterns induce weight loss. When people focus, they lose weight. It's not necessarily the dietary pattern. But we also see that within 6 to 12 months, they're going to start a regain. So I always say to my clients, weight loss is not impressive. It's more maintenance, because that's a sign that your body's shifted, that you've shifted your habits, and you are acting like a different person.
Yeah, I love that. And that brings me into asking you about the tips, because again, I know you like as the tip of the day on Instagram, and I'm like always waiting for Nomi's tip of the day. And you break them down into such practical ways. Can you share with our audience some of either like the tips that have resonated most with people, or what you see as being like really helpful to move the needle and just kind of like get people in that, what you're saying, like the focus of it?
Totally. I'll say kind of like the tips of the day that I use myself. Like I'm using all of them. That's how they come to me. My son's like, when are you going to run out of tip of the day? I'm like, never. Here's what I'm like really strict about. 12 hours of non-eating, non-negotiable. Morning sunlight, non-negotiable. High protein, high fiber, high quality fat breakfast, non-negotiable. I always say I eat a chicken salad for breakfast. I got a lot of like pushback today in the class that I was teaching. And I say, I just want to remind everybody, 70% of the American population is overweight. 50% is dealing with a chronic disease. 50% is pre-diabetic or diabetic. If we eat Western style diets, we will have Western style diseases. Make sure that you're eating breakfast that is not Western style. No oatmeal, muffins, cereals, ditch it.
I love that. I saw you recently had something. I forget exactly what it was. I don't know if it was like a stir fry situation, but it was something that a lot of people would say that looks like dinner.
Oh, the tofu. It's tofu.
Yes.
It's my new favorite breakfast.
I always think about this also because people have such a weird thing of like, but I can't eat X for breakfast. Not eggs, like X, whatever, insert whatever food. Like that's not a quote unquote breakfast food. I'm like, who made these rules? Because if you look at other cultures, or let's say even with
Lauren.
Yeah, go ahead.
You know who made these rules?
Oh, tell us.
Kellogg's in like the 20s and food marketing. Food marketing made rules that we subconsciously adhere to. There is a food culture in America. What's the difference between a cult and a culture? The amount of letters. There's a food culture in America around processed food, and it is really negatively impacted everybody's subconscious around what they should be eating for breakfast. We have been sold the idea that breakfast foods are sweet, that breakfast foods are carbohydrate-y, that we're eating pancakes and muffins. And if you're not eating kosher, then you're also eating bacon. We've been sold this maple syrup. We've got a whole array of breakfast foods that are not at all what we should be eating for breakfast.
Yeah. I mean, muffins are basically just cake in a circle. And it's interesting a lot of times, totally. Like I'll have, this is actually one of the most common questions I get from women. Like, what's the deal with eggs? Are they going to raise my cholesterol? Like people are so afraid to eat, you know, more than one egg. And I'm like, whatever, there's different things we could talk about with the eggs, but like you're eating, you know, Cocoa Puffs every day for breakfast. Like, why is there no question about the Cocoa Puffs, which like we know having tons of carbs and sugar on an empty stomach first thing in the morning, that's just spiking your glucose. It's not setting you up for good energy throughout the day. And that's just kind of like a given because it's true. I guess we've just been so deeply,
sold on
this idea.
Yeah, the nutrition information that came out of the 80s before nutritional biochemistry was as mainstream and developed as it is today was very false. We didn't understand the context. There was hyper-focusing on aspects of food, compounds in food, or macronutrients without understanding that food occurs within a context. That context is you and your lifestyle. That context is the whole food itself. And it's really important to make sure that people understand that, you know, I kind of say like, don't be a fryer. Like we were sold this idea. And listen, I ate like this until I was like 18. The food marketing is really pushing us to eat things that are not healthy for us. But another thing that happened in the 80s was we took fat out of food. And when you take fat out of food, you increase sugar. And now we have an epidemic of type 2 diabetes, which is not a disease that should be happening to people in their 30s, 40s, and 50s. It's a disease of muscle wasting that we should be seeing in geriatric people. But it's a disease of overexposure to sugar, and that's because of food processing and all of these subconscious rules and marketing around food.
Yeah, it's really sad. We're seeing also just a huge increase with children with, you know, pediatric diabetes, which is really scary. It's interesting. Like I'm trying to think when I was little, I remember I collected these little, like, I don't know what you would call them, like tickets on the cereal box that I could like put into this online program. And I had this like little avatar. It was called Millsbury. If anybody knows what I'm talking about, please write to me, because I was like the richest person on Millsbury. And I had this whole like fake life and a job and a mansion and whatever. And I
that
could like cut out the tops.
Crazy.
Oh yeah. But I like got money from it. It was like, I don't know if it was through Kellogg's or like one of these cereal companies, but I like got money for my little character from like collecting more cereals. I'd be like, Mom, you have to get like these cereals so I could get like these prizes in my computer avatar world. That's not like my real life, but it felt like my real life.
Wow, that is such a perverse level of food marketing that takes influence away from the parent. It should be illegal. That is crazy.
I'm pretty sure in Spain, they've outlawed doing things like this. Like you're not allowed to market certain sugary products to children. But if you think about like all the characters, you know, like the Flintstones are Cocoa Pebbles and like the rabbit with tricks, like I remember also like we'd wait for the new commercials, like the Apple Jacks commercials were so funny. And there's a really great book called Sugar Proof that's all about like the sugar epidemic with children. And they talk about like really educating your children on how, like you're saying, you know, we've kind of been duped by this crazy marketing scheme, and children don't like to be tricked. And the more you educate people and show them, like, look at how these companies are kind of trying to get you in and hook you in, people don't like that. And that can actually help you think about like, wait, what's actually going to serve me? Like, do I need to be making millions of more dollars for my online avatar? Like, do I need to be eating something that actually helps me feel a little bit better so I could have real human social interaction instead of with these bots on Millsbury Town?
I remember years ago reading an article about Doritos and how they're actually, the reason that Doritos have bubbles on them is to increase the surface area, because they found that you can actually, there's more spice adhesion and it's more flavorful and people will eat more.
Wow.
And I have a friend who actually used to be a food tester, and the level of psychological manipulation that is put into making snack foods more edible, more eating, more portions is absolutely insane.
Yes. This is also something that I tell my clients a lot. Like, you don't realize that millions and millions of dollars have been spent on the research to make these foods so hyper palatable and like make you crave them. It's not your fault that you crave them. It's not like a personality defect or a willpower issue. It's like a chemistry thing. Of course you're going to crave these foods because they've figured out the exact amount of crunch and flavor and spice and sweet and fat and salt and all the things to make it addictive, essentially.
100%. I think honestly, like for a lot of people, you know, sometimes people will walk away from a workshop or a course that I give and they feel like a little bit overwhelmed, because I give a lot of information. I want to be thorough. But I always say to people, start from where you are. And one of the great places to start for a lot of people, especially people living in the States, is to just eat less things that come out of packages. You know, I have clients who even buy their sweet potatoes pre-cut from the freezer section at Trader Joe's. Just challenge yourself to cut up that sweet potato yourself. I even say, to make the task less intimidating, time yourself, because it'll take you maybe 3 minutes. It feels, there's stress perception. It'll take more time. It's messy. It's this. But once we get into those little habits, they do flow more quickly. And so just cutting out some of that processed food is a great way, or the ultra processed food and some of the processed food. Some processed food helps us, you know, have convenience. But I think it's important to really just become aware that we can just step away in those incremental changes.
Yeah, I love that. Like, because that's where I feel like your knowledge is so helpful, that you break it down into these really simple things of like, just try to have a little bit less out of the package and translate it to like cutting up some of your own fresh foods or vegetables or whatever the things are. And I think that's really, really helpful for people. And I know you said like you got a lot of pushback on the breakfast. Are there any other tips that either like really resonated with people or that you got a lot of pushback on?
I guess people don't like to eat chicken salad for breakfast. So I think one of the things is, most people come to me, they think I'm a nutritionist and I'm going to give them like this really precise eating plan. And my idea is really to give you sort of a form of ideas. I give meal plans when they're requested, when people want them. But I also say, like, at a lot of your life, you're going to just kind of have to make these good decisions in the moment. And so the one thing I recommend for all my clients who, you know, they're not food prepping, they don't have time to like, put everything into cute containers in their fridge, make sure that half of every meal is non-starchy vegetables. And so that's just like a really basic upgrade. It increases our antioxidant and phytonutrient intake. And also, when we're eating those vegetables, as opposed to like filling up the plate with more of the, you know, other things that could be on that plate, we're getting a lot more of those beneficial fibers. And so it's giving us a good dose of those. And those fibers are really essential for our microbiome. And the bacteria that are in our gut do kind of help us influence what we crave. So yeah. I had a question today where somebody said to me, how do I have less cravings for sugary things? I said, well, the easiest thing is honestly to eat more fruits and vegetables and help feed the bacteria in your gut that thrive on the non-fermentable fibers or non-digestible fibers of fruits and vegetables. And eventually the bacteria that feeds on sugar, instead of it being your biggest population in your gut and then communicating with your brain via your vagal nerve, go get more sugar. There's that communication between our gut and our brain, the enteric nervous system and the central nervous system through that vagus nerve. We're going to influence our microbiome. It's not pharmaceuticals. It takes time. It takes a month, 2 months, 3 months. Consistency is our best friend. And the other thing I would say that I say to people is do not wait for Monday or Sunday or April 1st or after Passover or after Christmas or whatever, January 1st. Do not wait. Whatever, own your next decision at your next meal. Don't wait till tomorrow because you ended up today eating Cocoa Puffs for breakfast and now you're hearing this podcast and you're like, okay, well, I might as well just go eat all the stuff and I'll start over tomorrow. This whole idea of starting over is just the dopamine hit and it just gives us that temporary great feeling of motivation, but it doesn't last. So start now and then keep practicing it from that moment on.
I love that. I think that's such a good tip and it's true. A lot of people are like, okay, I'm going to start it at this point when everything lines up in my life. And like, I have all the cute containers for meal prep or like whatever the thing is. And there's so many weird subconscious things. Like I remember I had that, like, I can't really do meal prep until I get a certain very specific type of mason jar. I don't know why I was telling myself that, but I notice these thoughts sometimes. I'm like, where did that come from? I guess I probably saw something on Instagram where like some other girl did the beautiful meal prep in her mason jar. So I was like, oh, I have to do it like that. But I love that tip. I think that's so helpful. I really want everyone to just like follow you for all the good tips. So can you tell everyone just all the good stuff, where they could find you, how they could work with you if they're interested, everything?
Yes. So my website is nomiknows.com, nomiknows.com. You can get in touch with me through there. Send me an email. I'm also available on email at nomi@nomiknows.com. And easy way to get in touch with me is through Instagram at Nomi Knows Nutrition. DM me and I'll respond to you. I do private assessments, functional assessments, where I'm looking at your food diary, your lifestyle, as well as your labs, and giving you a very comprehensive protocol to move forward with your health. And I also do month-to-month follow-up, as well as workshops and programs. So I usually have a program. I just finished two programs. I have another program starting after Passover, group programs that everybody gets really great information for 6 weeks of support. And I love running the groups and educating and teaching a lot of people.
Okay. Sounds amazing. Thank you so much for your time. Thank you for being here. And I feel like we have to do a part two because I have so many other questions that I didn't even get to ask you, but I appreciate it so much. Thanks, Nomi.
Thanks, Lauren.
Thank you so much for listening to the About Health and Hormones podcast. If you loved today's episode, I would love to know. Please leave a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify so I can make this podcast even better for you all. I would love to connect with you. Follow me on Instagram at Lauren Allen Nutrition or head to my website, www.laurenallennutrition.com, to learn about my coaching programs and stay up to date on all of my latest workshops and courses. I am so glad you are here today and I wish you all health and happiness.